Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null. I'm getting up soon in the
morning. Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about how long the government has known of the healing power of the cannabinoids, the actual ingredients from the marijuana plant, and what they can do about it today. How rose hips can melt away body fat, how olive oil can slash your risk of cardiovascular disease, how nanoparticles in consumer products significantly alter your normal gut bacteria, and lab tests, McDonald's, quote, devastates the gut health in 10 days. Anthony Gutiardi. Plus, today, we have an interesting guest. We have a gentleman who's been on the show before. His name is Hagopian. He is a practicing clinical psychologist out in California. We're going to talk about a discussion of Operation Jade Helm that will commence this July for 2 months. Now, on the right, you hear that it's in preparation for martial law and the takeover of sovereignty. Is there any proof of that? Or is that just, you know, excessive hyperbole? But they're doing something, and we want to know what they're doing and why they're doing it. And this whole idea of militarization in America, weren't we supposed to have laws that prevented this? So we'll get into this in depth because Hagopian is a graduate of the U.S. Military Academy at West Point. He has an extensive background in academia. He is the author of Don't Let the Bastards Get You Down. So you'll find that interesting. Also today, we're going to hear from a woman who was probably the pharmaceutical industry's number one marketing person. She's the one who, when she went into a doctor's office, she came out knowing that she had that doctor in her grips, Gwen Olson, about how they get the doctors and their staff locked into using a particular drug or vaccine. Also, for those who didn't know it, last night the state Senate in California passed that vaccine bill that makes it mandatory now. It just has to be signed by the governor. Well, that's unfortunate. There is still an opportunity for people in this audience who are listening from California, which are tens of thousands, to call the governor and ask him to veto it. And if nothing else, let the governor listen to the two-hour discussion that is with Bonnie Faulkner of Guns and Butter, where I spend two full hours giving detailed, specific, quality, scientific references about the lack of safety and efficacy, also the financial connections between the people sponsoring the legislation and where that money came from. And that's not ethical. So let him at least know that we know the truth, and hopefully he will at least look for the truth. So that will happen. And one parent, who some of you may know, he is a well-known and highly respected actor, Adrian Quinn, knows firsthand the problems of vaccine. So we'll have a discussion with that. Now, I don't know if we'll have time. If we have time, I want to discuss the idea of who created ISIS. That's important. So we have a lot to share with you, as we do each day. Let's begin. I'm going to start with the latest on McDonald's. I'll quote this. This is from Natural Society, Anthony Gutiardi. We all know food at McDonald's is virtually unfit for human consumption. Now, disturbing new lab results have reportedly demonstrated the true extent of the damage you are doing to your body when you eat fast food. Specifically, we're talking about the devastation of your gut health, the attack on the most important part of your biological immune response. in a report that really brings into focus just what's going on when we throw a bunch of chemical additives together with some meat-like substances, a professor of genetic epidemiology at King's College London used one unlucky college student who also happened to be a son to see what truly goes on in our stomachs when we chow down on some quarter pounders. It goes way beyond just supersizing your pant size and clogging your arteries. According to the professor, Professor Tim Spector, whose research on the effects of McDonald's food on the gut are published in the book The Diet Myth, something really unexpected happened. Speaking on what happened to his test subject, his college son, he said, quote, his gut bacteria were devastated. In just 10 days of consuming Big Macs, Chicken McNuggets, fries, and Coca-Cola, Professor's son was found by laboratory fecal testing to lose nearly 1,400 types of bacteria species from his gut. That's nearly 40% of his total variety. What's worse is that these did not return after he switched back to a normal diet. Now, this is really concerning news. It's the kind of news that helps bring the full picture into view when it comes to the average American diet. As you probably know, I've been passionate about the secret of gut health, probiotics, the balance of the bacteria for quite some time. And there's a whole lot of new research showing that your immune system is directly related to how healthy your gut bacteria are. And so my suggestion is this. First and foremost, think about what you're doing when you support McDonald's. You're supporting a multinational corporation that has adversely changed the health of people in every community it's in. In fact, it was about 15 years ago that when I was studying world longevity trends for a major article I was writing on longevity, that I noticed for the first time that the Japanese were beginning to lose their position as the number one group in the world for the longest lifespan and healthiest. And it wasn't because the older Japanese were doing anything wrong. It was their children, the young people, because they were not liking the traditional way of eating or the traditional way of working with the family. They wanted the fast foods, what they saw over the internet and on television. So now they're eating these foods where you never had a problem with obesity and diabetes and heart disease in Japan before. Now you do. That's also true in India, in Brazil, and all these emerging economies where a poor class had to basically eat poor people's food, which meant tubers, root vegetables, cassava, breadfruit, the beans, the pulses, legumes, nuts, seeds, fresh fruits. And juices, lots of juices are consumed fresh in South and Central America and in Asia as well. And then they gave that up and went over to fried chicken, French fries, hamburgers, barbecued ribs, colas. And with that came diabetes. But now, based upon what this scientist has discovered in his own laboratory with his son, it really adversely affects the good bacteria in your intestine. And my suggestion is to his son, take probiotics every day. I would suggest taking 10 to 20 billion per day. Take them in the morning, afternoon, and the evening. And also have a glass of sauerkraut juice each day. That will help. And beet juice, that also helps. Prebiotics. Next, nanoparticles. They're in consumer products. They significantly alter your normal gut. This is in the University of California at Riverside, and this is published in Environmental Engineering Science. Quote, exposure to metal oxide nanoparticles at levels that could be present in foods and drinking water could lead to measurable changes in the gut microbiome. That's your gut bacteria. Quote, understanding the interactions of these nanoparticles and bacteria in an engineered model, could indicate potential impacts of the nanoparticle exposure on the gut and therefore overall health. So they found that it wasn't good So they can, you're not even aware of all the things that have these nanoparticles. So stay away from anything that has nanoparticles, because they've never been tested on human health. Never. But something that has been tested and has been around a long time and is really good for you, olive oil. This is the latest in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. And what they did is they looked at the fats, the good fats, the fats that play a role in preventing health complications from cardiovascular disease, and they looked at all these studies, and there are a lot of them, and they found that olive oil was able to slow or stop the advancement of heart disease, heart attacks, and strokes. That's good information, by as much as 44% reduction in death associated with cardiovascular disease. Now, I don't know about you, but I love olive oil, and I go out of my way to make sure I get the finest that I can find, which is the organic certified extra virgin, and by a maker who I can check to see, how do you know that this is not, you know, soybean oil adulterated, because there's a massive market in Greece and in Italy with organized crime that takes the olive oil and dilutes it by about 90%, so you get a little tiny bit of olive oil and the rest of it's soybean oil. So you've got to know which companies over there are legitimate and that their product has been independently tested. And it just takes some letters and phone calls to the company getting verification of tests. So this way you know you're getting the right thing. Now, don't get any of the light oils. These should be dark, and they should have a little stronger taste to them. And they should be greenish, and like a dark green. That's when you know you're getting the really best oil. And then use it every day. I suggest 2 tablespoons of olive oil a day. That's really a good amount to get into your system. And that's about how much the average person in the Mediterranean eats. Put it on brown rice. Put it over a salad. Put it over a baked potato. There's so many good ways you can use the olive oil. But it benefits you in a tremendous way, especially helping you prevent a heart attack or a stroke, and that's always good. Now, rose hips. I remember when I wanted to find out from a manufacturer who was telling me the product had 500 milligrams of rose hip. And I'm thinking at the time, that seems like an awful lot of rose hip. So what I did is I purchased some rose hip and brought it to the laboratory where I was a scientist at the Institute of Applied Biology. And I wanted to see how many rose hips I would have to use and what gram weight they would be before I got 500 milligrams of ascorbic acid or vitamin C. And it turned out it was the size of a golf ball. So I contacted the manufacturer. I said, well, there's something that's amiss here, because you're advertising 500 milligrams of rosehip vitamin C, and they say, well, no, we meant 500 milligrams of rosehip, but it didn't mean 500 milligrams of vitamin C. So you got to be, well, back then at least you had to be careful. Today that they wouldn't be able to get away with that. But in any case, rosehip is still one of the best sources of vitamin C in the world. It just takes an awful lot of it, and more than what an average person can consume. But then there are other things that are good about rosehip. They don't have to be in large amounts. And according to, and by the way, the rosehip are the fruit of the rose plant. And they've been used for thousands of years. And some new research shows that not only does it help reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease, but in a 12-week double-blind placebo-controlled study, when taken each day, it was able to reduce total body belly fat. And the belly fat is that fat that when you have it increases your risk of a heart attack or a stroke. So that's good. Now, it's not difficult to get rosehip, good pure rosehip, all by itself. You can buy it in powder form. You can buy it in tablet form. So if you have a belly that's fat and you want to help reduce that in a healthy way, then rosehip has been shown to do exactly that. So that's good. Now, that's the latest on health and nutrition. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to explore some of these other issues that are important that don't get the attention they deserve. Please stay with us. Back in a moment.
Get a feeling that's so hard to bear. You give me fever when you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight, fever in the morning, fever all through the night. Listen to me, baby, hear every word I say.
I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. This I found interesting. This is from Truth Out from Eleanor Bader. She says, physical education takes a hit. School's emphasis on testing is making kids sick. A study conducted by Harvard School of Public Health laid the problem out in stark terms. Fewer than 50% of U.S. youth currently get the recommended amount of moderate the vigorous exercise they need to become healthy adults. Not surprisingly, the amount of movement deemed necessary varies by age, and they're just not getting it. It's only 150 minutes per week. That's not much, and yet they're not getting it. Indeed, whether it's through game playing, during recess, attending regular gym classes, playing a sport, taking dancing or karate or Pilates or yoga classes, skateboarding or biking or running, the upshot is the same. Kids, experts agree, should be physically active and should not spend all their time sitting in class or lazing in front of a television or electronic screen at home. But they do. In fact, since the passage of the No Child Left Behind Act, 44% of school administrators admit that they've cut physical education or recess to focus on test preparation. So this policy shift is bad, completely bad. So when we were all growing up, we had recess. Kids played. After school, kids played. There were intramurals. There was, you know, pick up basketball and football. Not today. So if you have a child or you can in any way influence the behavior of parents who do, maybe your sons or daughters, let them know that they should be doing 1 hour. Minimum 1 hour of physical activity per day that's vigorous, all right? Play ball with them, play soccer with them, you know, engage with them. But don't let them go home and sit in front of a television and or sit in front of a computer. Now, let us listen now to a woman who was arguably the most significant person in the pharmaceutical industry as the face and the voice and the personality of Big Pharma. She was the one who got into doctors' offices and got the doctors to use those drugs, whether they were statins or antidepressants or antipsychotics or chemotherapies. These are the people who get the doctors and the hospitals to use these. This is Glenn Olson.
There's no such thing as a safe drug. By the time a drug's approved and it hits the general population, we don't know even 50% of the side effects that are involved with that drug. We were being trained to misinform people. I spent 15 years in the pharmaceutical industry working for some of the major manufacturers. It wasn't like I woke up one morning and said, you know, I need to get out of pharmaceutical sales. It was actually an awakening process for me. It was a spiritual and consciousness process where, as I started observing what was happening, what some of the drugs were doing, the misinformation, the disinformation, that I was being encouraged to minimize side effects when I talked to doctors, I started to recognize that these patients were literally being tortured by the drugs that they were given. My niece was 20 years old. She was attending Indiana University, and she was a pre-med student. extremely intelligent, beautiful woman, and just a beautiful spirit inside and out. She was in a car accident and was prescribed Vicodin, hydrocodone, for pain and became addicted. While she was studying, she determined that the sedative properties of her drugs were keeping her from being able to concentrate, so she purchased some ephedra, which is a stimulant. She had a drug interaction and ended up in the emergency room at the local hospital. And they tagged her with a bipolar illness diagnosis, not a drug toxicity or, reaction to the drugs that she was on. And they started giving her more major antipsychotics and mood stabilizers. And that set her on the road to becoming a mental patient. She eventually had to drop out of school after a 5-month period of trying to withdraw from Effexor and all of the other antipsychotics and drugs that they had put her on. She was extremely severely depressed, and her mom was on her way home to take her forcibly back to the psychiatrist and get her placed back on drugs. So my niece walked into her younger sister's room and took an angel-shaped lantern that was filled with oil and poured it over herself and ignited it, and she burned herself alive. It was a promise that I made to her that I would not let her memory be sullied, that I would tell people what in fact had happened to her, and that she would not be remembered as a mentally or genetically defective person, that I would not allow that to happen. And I realized that there are thousands and thousands of those people out there, and they need a voice, and I'm serving as that voice.
Now, how's this for a very scary number? In the last 10 years, the use of antipsychotic drugs on young children and teenagers has increased more than 500%. There's growing concern these drugs are being given in even greater doses to kids in foster care, putting them in a virtual chemical straitjacket. Here's national correspondent Byron Pitts with tonight's Eye on Your Children.
Yes, this child is on 6 different psychotropic drugs, 7 different psychotropic drugs.
Gwen Olson is a child advocate and a former pharmaceutical rep who quit her job and wrote this book, Confessions of an RX Drug Pusher, after seeing so many children given so many drugs.
They clamp down on the central nervous system. In effect, they reduce your mobility and that sort of thing. So they're sort of like a chemical straitjacket.
A large number of psychiatrists are dishonest because I see them giving people drugs that they know are brain-damaging therapeutics, that they know do not have positive long-term outcomes, that they know will not cure anything. They just take a list of symptoms and then they call it a mental illness or a mental disorder. And these are voted upon by psychiatrists. We can define people as being mentally ill, and therefore we can sell more drugs for the pharmaceutical industry. It's an extremely lucrative alliance because there's no scientific data that's required for a psychiatrist to diagnose a mental illness. There's no blood test, there's no urine test, there's no PET scan, there's no medical evidence required. And so therefore, that broadens the potential patient population considerably. I was so disillusioned, as well as angry, when I really found out how much deception, how much misinformation was taking place, and how I had been used in that game, because I literally was the one who was on the front lines. I was harming people unintentionally, but I was responsible, and I carry a burden for that now. I decided that in order for me to be able to live with myself based on what I had observed and participated in, that I had a moral obligation to get out and inform other people. When I have talked to as many people that I have talked to in the last year, when I have seen as many psychiatric patients damaged, I know that what I'm doing is a calling. It's a spiritual calling for me. And I do it with great conviction and I do it with passion, because I understand that this is a situation that's not going to get any better unless people that have this experience and knowledge start speaking out.
Again, you were just listening to Gwen Olson, who I've had on this program, and she talked about how the pharmaceutical industry always hires young, very attractive, well-groomed, well-mannered, very personable men and women. And they give them a lot of incentives, including brand new cars, the gold credit cards, first class accommodation, bonuses and perks for the more they get a doctor to order. And one of the games she said they play is when a doctor has their own pharmacy in their office, which some do, to go in there. And once they become friendly, and how do they become friendly? They start setting up a lunch program for all the doctor's employees. So let's say a doctor has 2 or 5 or even 20 employees, depending upon the size of the practice. Then they will find out what the people love to eat, and then they will cater it. They will go to the best restaurant or deli and bring every single day in all that food. Well, then in time, the people in the office not only get used to you bringing in their lunch, but also you have access. And then they'll say, well, what are all the drugs that you have? And so they'll make a list of all the drugs that they dispense. Then they'll go ahead and get refills of all those drugs and give them to the doctor. Now the doctor is selling the patient a drug, but the doctor is getting the drug for free. Now, that should be a form of bribery, but it's not. And no one's ever been challenged on that. And yet, this is one of the games they play. I also was coming back from a lecture I'd just given in Coral Gables to a group, a wonderful group. It was one of those, most of my lectures are in and out the same day, including to California, believe it or not. Flying to California, driving 2 hours, doing a lecture before 1,000 doctors, driving back to the airport and taking the red eye overnight and being back in New York the next day. So I went down to this lecture, and I was at the back end of it, so I didn't see what was going on at the front end. And then they said, it's time, and I went in, and whoa, it was the Coral Gables Civic Center, and every single seat was taken. People were in the aisle standing, and it rocked 3 hours. But then when I went back to the airport, and I was flying back late that night on the last flight, this really heavyweight guy came over to me, and he said, didn't I just see you on PBS? I said, yeah, I was on PBS here in this area in West Palm Beach. He said, I'm into that health stuff. He's sitting there with cigarettes in his pocket, and he probably weighs 150 pounds more than what he should, but he's into this health stuff, right? I hear that all the time. As people stop me on the street smoking a cigarette, Gary, what was that vitamin you said to take? Yeah. And so we were talking, and he says, I don't think you'll like what I do. And I said, what's that? And he said, well, I'm a drug rep. I said, well, there's some drugs that are necessary and life-saving. I'm not against all drugs. I'm not against all medical procedures. I'm just against those that are not necessary, those that are dangerous, where something else that's safer could be used. And I said, but, you know, if you have a car wreck, if you've just severed a finger, if you just had your eye poked out or your jaw broken, you just had a tooth knocked out, you just had a heart attack or a stroke, you better hope that you get in the hands of medical care, emergency medical care, because it's the best in the world in the United States. It's the chronic care that we fell at, not our emergency care. And I said, so, you know, some drugs are good and beneficial, some are terrible and not needed and addictive or deadly. He said, I'm in the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory business. I said, so you sell to rheumatologists? He said, that's correct. I said, the most deadly drug in history in the United States was Vioxx that killed, we guesstimate, between 60 to 80 million, caused 100,000 heart attacks and strokes, and we don't know how many more of them died. I said, so think of it this way. In 4 years, you had more Americans die from one drug that they knew was deadly before they even marketed it than all of American casualties in the 10 actual years of the Vietnam War. The Vietnam War was actually 20 years when you consider our supporting the French over there. In any case, he said, well, I don't know about that. He said, what I know about is that, man, there's a lot of greedy doctors out there. I said, why do you say that? He said, because we offer each one money if they per patient, if they get, for every new patient they get on the drug, we give them cash. How much do you give them? $500. So how many patients the average rheumatologist have? They might have 500 or 600 patients. So every one of those patients, or not all of them, are going to be on a drug, but let's say if you got half. So $500 times 100, that's a lot of money. Yeah, he said it's done all the time. And I've never had a single doctor say no. And I said, well, if the rheumatologist tells the patient, I'm going to recommend this drug, not because I know anything about it or have had any test on it, but because I'm receiving $500, I think a lot of patients say, hold on a second, doc, I don't want to be the guinea pig. But they don't tell the patient, just like chemotherapists, oncologists don't tell the patient, cancer patient, they could receive, you know, make $100,000 a year from per patient by selling them the chemotherapy. So it's a racket. Anyhow, I wanted to share that with you. But a lot of the things that she told me, I did not know. And she was very open and honest. I filmed her out in San Francisco. And you'll see her in The War on Health, the documentary. Now let's go over and hear from an actor, a father, who has a perspective. It's short, only about 2 minutes long, on vaccines.
Looking again at your biography, and again, you and your family have, because my sister is mentally disabled, and, you know, it's not that you have a mentally disabled, but tell us about, you know, autism runs in the family, right?
I don't know if it runs in the family. There's one person with autism, that's my daughter.
Uh-huh.
My oldest daughter has autism.
Did you see that early on, or was that something?
Yeah, well, after she had an extreme reaction to vaccination.
Oh, that was what?
Wow. She was a normal child.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
And I want to get that out because, again, there's a lot of, you know, debate about that. But when somebody is able to say, look, this happened.
This happened. Yeah.
So debate, there you go.
Debate shmabate.
Debate's done.
Yeah, the debate is from billions and billions of dollars of drug company money. And listen, the National Vaccine Fund is bankrupt every year, you know, and they figure they got about 1 out of 20 of the people that are actually injured and even contact them, you know. You're allowed to put in vaccines what you're not allowed to put in that carpet or in furniture.
I didn't know that.
As preservatives. You can put formaldehyde, you can put heavy metals, aluminum, I mean, you know.
That's insane.
All to increase the profits of drug companies. And hey, you know what, we keep going, if we keep letting them do it, you know, they want flu shots for everybody mandated now, you know, flu shots that don't work.
Well, I appreciate what you have to say, because again, as I said, you know, as a fan, it's hard on the family, it's hard on the, you know, the one going through it. And so what are your tips for other parents that have that situation and are going through that? What are some things you've been able to learn and educate yourself as to be able to do?
Well, with autism, obviously, it's the earliest you can get intervention and try and do major detoxing if it is from a vaccine. You know, that's the thing to do.
I didn't know that.
You know, you do the best you can and you get the most help. And
that's the thing we always want. You know, some people literally, they let their kids, and I know this because I grew up with seeing other parents let their kids go to a home and...
Okay, that's Aidan Quinn, who the actor, talking about his daughter having autism, and you heard him say it was the vaccines. And no one knows a child's development better than a mother and father. And now we're going to go over to our guest who's standing by, and he is Joaquin Hagopian. That's Hagopian. He is a practicing clinical psychologist and a counselor in California for over a quarter century. And he focuses on disadvantaged youth and family abuse and the child welfare system and education. And he attended U.S. Military Academy at West Point. And he has clashed with the system a long time. And he's here today to talk about an article that I read of his in Global Research, where he writes, he also writes about the national security and police state and geopolitics, and his position on Operation Jade Helm. Nice to have you back with us.
Thank you very much, Gary.
I don't believe many of our listeners are aware of a two-month military exercise called Operation Jade Helm that will include troops from our four military branches, plus the Navy SEALs and Green Beret, that will take place in Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, California, Nevada, Utah, and Colorado starting in July. Now, government maps note that some of these states are tagged as either hostile, such as Texas, Utah, and California, or partially hostile. We know that the operation is for real and not a conspiratorial fantasy. The Washington Post has reported on it. The Department of Defense's documents state it's training for, quote, unconventional warfare, and will be in concert with many local officials. The government claims that this is all part of a national security strategy to prepare the country for foreign occupations, whoever that could be, possibly since we have a military that is unmatched. However, Jade Helm opponents view it as a prelude for a possible national martial law if the government so wishes. The Houston Chronicle reports that part of the operation is that its participants will be disguised as civilians, driving civilian vehicles and living among the local communities. Right now, as you have noted many times in the past, we have a government that is completely untrustworthy. Our government is made up of sociopaths and psychological misfits. And I don't think any reasonable person looking at people in positions of power and what they've done would judge them any less harshly. That doesn't mean all. I'm only talking about those who are mainly the policymakers. There's almost nothing that comes out of the mouths of the Obama administration that we should simply give credence to without verification. Obama has repeatedly misstated to the nation facts since his first presidential campaign, has failed to keep any of his campaign promises. We are also at a point in our history when U.S. surveillance and policing of the public is an all-time high, and America's faith in the government is an all-time low. And law enforcement, the military, and the ruling elite, regardless of how terrible its crimes, are above the laws and penalties that the average citizen is subject to. And that is a common characteristic of a police state. And a Wall Street Journal poll recently found that 95% of Americans believe that civil unrest will grow during the summer. So the question is whether or not the many draconian government actions and policies that have been instituted during the past years are in anticipation of a time when the government might impose martial law on the nation, and whether or not Jade Helm is one more operation to put into place the infrastructure, as it were, for future martial law. So please take your time and explain what Jade Helm likely is and what it certainly is not.
Sure. Well, I think just like the Boston bombings aftermath became like the dry run for testing out in a metropolitan area of 4.5 million people in Boston, what it's like to have a complete lockdown in a large American city with the military armed with their guns going from house to house, almost as if they're in Iraq. That was the dry run, and now it's over one quarter quadrant of the United States with the Southwest involved, all the states that happen to be bordering Mexico. And what they say, of course, is that it's just an experiment to better our skills so that we're able to fight foreign wars against foreign people. Trying to infiltrate into the population. When Lieutenant Colonel Lastoria, based on the overwhelming reaction of concern by Texans, met in Bastrop County, Texas, to try and assuage some of the worry and fear, all he did is dodge and dance and didn't make anything clear. His answers were all very nondescript and evasive, and it only raised more questions and more concerns. And the mainstream media, which is, of course, just basically a mouthpiece for our government, has gone on a field day, a bandwagon frenzy, trying to basically just state that all these people that are concerned are paranoid conspiracy nuts that are on the loose and out of control. And that's what prompted me to write my article recently, because in my article, I give every reason why any reasonable, any rational, any halfway intelligent and self-aware individual in America has every reason and right to question the so-called true intentions of our military in this two-month operation that never happened that long, in a two-month operation in the United States on foreign soil, never involving so many states, never involving so many different military elite. They're all from the Green Beret and the Delta Force and the Navy SEALs. The killer elite of our military forces are all involved in this, in addition to all the law enforcement agencies, such as the FBI, the Drug Enforcement Administration, the Border Patrol, and all the local police departments. They're all in it together. So that would give just alone plenty of reason why people should be concerned about what potential consequences of such a large-scale operation on our own soil might result in. And there's so much speculation out there. Obviously, we want to think that it's just an exercise, but the bottom line of the American government is they are not to be trusted. The president and the Congress and the judicial system have all been liars to the max. So, of course, there's going to be a lot of people that fear the worst, that there might be some kind of dissident extraction. They were practicing this on March 27th in Fort Lauderdale. There's photos all over the internet and videos where they have this. Now, these are like so-called players playing the role of dissidents being rounded up. But they are have their right hand on the person in front of there, and they're marching in single file, ostensibly to the prison camp.
Okay, let me interrupt you here for a moment, because there's two things I'd like you to be more specific about. For those who are the corporate liberals, those like MSNBC, Mucha Pacifica, the people who get their money from the Ford and Rockefeller foundations, we cannot any longer be naive to think when George Soros gives you a lot of money, he's doing it because he loves your body politics. You know, these people know that when you give money, no different than when a doctor gets money from a pharmaceutical company to research at an institute, that person pretty much now is going to be self-censoring. They won't be your enemy. They won't be marching in a line in front of your building, you know, to protest the toxic drug you've created. So we have seen massive, massive amounts of money go into front groups, AstroTurf groups, to think tanks, to foundations, to MSNBC, to Mother Jones, to The Nation magazine, where there is a complete cognitive disconnect, that they refuse to acknowledge that there's anything that our government could possibly do like this that would be untoward or adverse to the American psyche. So they're not willing to even entertain a discussion. These people, none of these I just mentioned, have even entertained the legitimacy of questioning any part of the 9/11 official report, including the authors of the official report, the people who actually did the report, like former Governor Kane and others have said that it's full of discrepancies, it's full of lies. You know, that's what it amounts to. And there's 2,000 architects and engineers who say, we don't know what actually happened, but we can tell you what didn't happen. And they're not willing to entertain this. So on the one hand, we have a large number of people who are the talking head experts, always called upon to calm the public and to give the public its marching orders or to give it its reality. On the other side, you have progressive voices who are looking for the truth. For example, in the African-American community, it'd be Cornel West. It would be Glenn Ford and Nellie Bailey. They are willing to stand up, look for the truth, and call it out, whatever it is. And you have in each area of the environment. Bill McKibben, in my opinion, you know, he has been compromised. He has been wrong so many times. I don't believe he's that naive. I don't think anyone could be that naive. And yet, there you have people believing, oh, talk with them more. You don't talk with people who have an agenda set in stone. If they're going to do something, they're going to do it. You don't talk George Bush and Dick Cheney and Rumsfeld out of attacking Paul Wolfowitz out of attacking Iraq. It's in their agenda. You could have 1,000 articles. You could do a documentary. You could have marches and speeches. They don't care because they know that they control the American consciousness, at least the majority. As long as they control the majority, they'll get away with doing whatever they want to do. So then we have this. This is from right now. This is from Nadia Propus from Common Dreams. Quote, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, broke its own internal rules when it spied on Keystone XL opponents in Texas, violating guidelines designed to prevent the agency from becoming overly involved in complex political issues. A new report by The Guardian and Earth Island Journal published this week. Internal documents acquired by the outlets through the Freedom of Information Act requests show how the FBI failed to get approval for launching investigations into Houston-based protesters whom the agency labeled, quote, environmental extremists, and held a bias in favor of the controversial tar sands pipeline, currently awaiting federal approval, extolling its supposed economic benefits in one document, which outlined reasons for spying on its opponents. Quote, many of these extremists believe the debates over pollution, protecting of wildlife, safety, and property rights have been overshadowed by the promise of jobs and cheaper oil prices. The Keystone Pipeline, as part of the oil and natural gas industry, is vital to the security and economy of the United States, end quote. That's from the FBI. So here we have a foreign magazine, newspaper, The Guardian, highly respected, telling us about how our own internal state police, something similar to the Stasi, the FBI, had infiltrated all of the activist groups in America, had labeled any protesters as extremist, which then means domestic terrorist, and then also, in one case, had snipers on building tops willing to take out if they were given the order of the Occupy movement members. Now, these are not hearsay, speculation, conjectures. These are actual prima facie facts. These are facts. Now, I realize that many on the left refuse to ever look at facts. They rather look at ideology. But the facts are that our government has been spying on us. The government has been infiltrating every single activist group. I don't care what you're an activist against. They're opposed to you. And then they put files together on you. They build networks of files. They want to know what books you've taken out of a library. They want to know what you're watching over the internet, what movies you get subscribed to, where you travel to. They want to hear every phone call you've had with anyone for at least the last 15 years. Not just getting the name and address and time, but the actual content. They have psychologists that then analyze this to see if they can create psychological profiles. This is one of the newest things we've just discovered. So now, putting into light that we have a government that considers its own people as if they are active or protest anything as domestic terrorists, now that brings in another wrinkle. So on the one hand, you have the sold-out intelligentsia of academia, with few exceptions. A Noam Chomsky is certainly an exception, and they're a handful. But by and large, they go along. You have the working class who are confused about everything because they don't know who to believe. You have the poor that are disempowered and have no advocates. You have the super wealthy who feel that they're above it. Nothing's going to happen to them. And you have your wannabes, 10 million millionaires. And if you count the fact that there's probably about 4 in each family, that's 40 million Americans who are millionaires. And about 1,800 of the 1,800 billionaires, over 700 of those are American. So when you look at these power groups, they're saying, We don't want anyone taking what's ours away. We don't want anyone disrupting our factories. We don't want anyone picketing. We don't want anyone demonstrating. We don't want any strikes. We don't want anyone not buying our product. We don't want anyone challenging our Trans-Pacific Partnership treaties. We don't want anyone. And now you start looking at how this really breaks down. Our government and all of its agencies are always spying upon Americans and lying about it. Our leaders are sociopathic, disturbed personalities. The media is bought and controlled entirely by special interest groups, and then on top of that are the advertisers. So where in the hell are we supposed to learn the truth about any of this? Your thoughts?
Well, let me take it one step further. There's been a pattern here where the government has actually been baiting the people. I mean, you can just look as recently as Baltimore, what happened there just a couple of weeks ago, where we had the Metropolitan Baltimore Police taking the high school kids off the buses and baiting them to react. And this is the way our government's been operating, in this very offensive and aggressive manner, to actually, you know, by design, get a reaction. And as soon as they get a reaction, what happens? They bring out the big guns. So that's why with this Jade Helm situation, I really believe that they are looking for some kind of paramilitary type to take some shots at the military and then declare war on America. That's kind of where it's leading, because they will bait and jab and probe and really induce by design a reaction, and then counter react with, in this case, probable martial law. I mean, it's very logical that this would be the sequence. It's not, yes, it is somewhat speculative, but you can also look at a pattern of events in our past where the government has aggressively actually caused reactions in various groups of people that they then come down. In the same way with a pipeline, you know, they had the snipers on the roof, all set, you know. So it's a pattern here where, you know, I think that they have been building and preparing for this major conflict here in America, and it's on the way to New World Order. I mean, this is the
because they don't
New World.
They don't want another Arab Spring here. But the fact is, I don't believe that America is suffering enough compared to the rest of the world suffering. We don't suffer the way others suffer. We have 18 million hungry children, but at least they have some food. We still have freedoms that other countries don't have. But every one of our freedoms and our constitutional rights and liberties are being usurped. Habeas corpus, usurped. The National Defense Authorization Act, the Patriot
Sure.
Act. Usurped the Telecom Act, re-usurping. What do you know about the 2012 leaked Army Military Police Training Manual entitled Civil Disturbance Operations? It describes how soldiers would confiscate firearms and even kill dissidents or intern them in camps for re-education, in accordance to U.S. Army Report FM3-19.40, after internment resettlement operations. Do you know if that's legitimate or is that bogus?
No, that's a legitimate document. It's the Army manual. It has the signature of the Secretary of the Army. It's legitimate. It came out after Obama was elected in 2010. It's been around. They've been hiring resettlement specialists and actually armed guards in the military. I'll tell you, you know, there's so much speculation, but it's just based on, like I say, a pattern where, say, probably August, September, towards the end, and this happened in Baltimore too, there may well be some kind of planned, staged crises, a series of crises, perhaps financial, or some kind of overreaction or false flag situation in any of the states, and martial law can be declared. You know, this is what a lot of Americans are afraid of, that this gives them the opportunity. And even if 2 months go by this summer and nothing happens in the way of all these, you know, stressful things, and it's just a drill, well, it conditions the people to be comfortable with having armed military in our streets, in our neighborhoods. And this is just, you know, I mean, posse comitatus law is gone, basically. The 2012 NDAA is allowed the military now to come crash down our doors, take us away without charges, keep us in prison as long as they want, labeling us some kind of enemy of the state or enemy sympathizer, dissident, anybody that disagrees with the government, and be without a trial, be without legal rights, be without any kind of representation. This is the totalitarian state we are living in right now. And you're right. The standard of living has been slipping and slipping, but it hasn't reached the point of critical mass where there's rioting in the streets. But I'm telling you, it's coming, because it's all being induced by design. There's going to be people that will be hungry and out in the streets. It's very probable. All we need is a false flag. All we need is like basically the world to drop the dollar. I mean, we've been like talking about that for a long time.
Well, that's going to come in the next 2 to 3 years.
That's going to come very soon. It's hard to pinpoint exactly when, but it's been moving in that direction for a long time now. So this is what we're up against.
Joaquin, we're out of time, and people should read the article, and it's in the current issue of the Global Research, and you can go to his website, empireexposed.blogspot.com. His name is Joaquin, which is J-O-A-C-H-I-M, and his last name is Hagopian, H-A-G-O-P-I-A-N, a practicing clinical psychologist in California for the last 25 years, a graduate of the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, and he spends a lot of time. He has been winning cases in a New York Federal District Court. He has done a lot of good to tell us the truth about our national security and police state. Thanks a lot for being with us today, Joaquin.
Thank you, Gary.
I'm Gary Nall. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening, and I look forward to sharing more on tomorrow's program. Have a nice day. Now let's say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice. Do we have Utrice there? No? She'll be here. Utrice Lead, next. Please stay with us.
Well, people